All right, thank you. Yeah, it's a real pleasure to be here. I think it's a, you know, it's been a great workshop so far. And we still have 2 days left, so that's great. So I'll talk about it's a little bit of an old paper actually I'll be explaining, but I've only presented it once at TQC and never again. So I thought this was a nice opportunity to talk about it again. I think there's still some interesting open questions left associated with this direction. So I'll just, you know, it's a bit, it's kind of old stuff, but hopefully we can make the old new again. You know, I guess for a lot of you, these words are semi-familiar, but I'll explain them all quickly. So I'll just for a quick overview, I'll just, I mean, everybody knows what we're talking about, so I'll do that very fast, but I'll just introduce my notation with the, unfortunately, the time arrow going in the wrong direction for the physicists. So sorry about that. Then I'll do a warm-up with the Clifford Group Protocol, which actually you've also seen Monday in Anne's talk. Then I'll show how to do instantaneous non-local quantum computation efficiently for circuits with low T count, which I'll define. Then I'll refresh the Gardenhaus model, although Harry kindly already talked about it on Monday. So I, you know, I don't have to show all the results. I'll just, you know, refresh your mind on what it is. And then I'll do the main tricky thing, which is show how to do instantaneous non-local quantum computation for circuits with low T depth. You know, we all know position verification because this is the QPV workshop. And I'll just go for the most basic security model, which is, you know, where we can talk a lot about what the good and bad part is, but we'll just disregard computation time. We'll just have verifiers that are trusted. We have the prover, and the attack model we have is two evil hackers who are trying to spoof a prover. And in our attack model, there is no prover. And of course, I'll just write down a general protocol saying, a general runbound protocol as saying, you know, the honest party just has to perform some channel phi. You know, and if we now switch perspective to, you know, look from the perspective of the attackers, then we have this task that we sometimes, you know, that people have called instantaneous and local quantum computation. I've also heard the argument that we maybe should use this workshop to fix the name to something that everybody will use in the future, because you know, there's multiple names for the same concept.
So is that the name you proposed it?
Yeah, not yet. But I'm happy. Maybe we should use tomorrow, so part of tomorrow for that. So this is, you know, this is just the name I've used in that paper. But you know, if someone has a good argument for what the name should be, then I'm happy to switch. Of course, the instantaneous non-local quantum part, I think, comes from this paper of Weidman, where he thought about instantaneous non-local quantum measurement, and it was called instantaneous because, you know, in the Copenhagen interpretation, if you measure a non-local observable at multiple locations, at some point, in some sense, your measurement has already been performed. So in that sense, it's instantaneously measuring a non-local variable. But of course, since everything still takes time and we have a round of simultaneous communication, it's not really instantaneous. So, you know, we should. I'll just use INQC for this talk, just to not confuse anyone. So we just have some channel, you know, with some register A and B coming in, some register A and B coming out. I guess you could also think of changing sizes, but I'll only be talking about unitaries anyway, so I'll just keep everything simple. And we want to simulate it with some Alice and some Bob. And now Alice and Bob in our minds are not devious attackers. Alice and Bob are just two cooperative players who want to play some game. And the rest of the talk, I'll actually no longer be talking about QPV at all. I'll no longer talking about attackers or security. I'll just talk about Alice and Bob that jointly want to perform some task. So everybody's, you know, we have the, Well, we're on the dark side, I guess. And of course, we want to simulate this channel in such a communication pattern, which next time I'll write bottom to top. So Alice receives some part of the state row, some register A, Bob receives part B, they share some states, and then they can, you know, in this communication pattern, they have to simulate this original map phi. And in particular, so let's say the state is some eta. One way to describe what is a good protocol would be to say that that this channel is close in diamond norm to, you know, the effective channel that you get from doing this. But in general, now this is just in practice we're not going to care about this, but because in practice I'm mostly going to talk about unitaries anyway and about the zero error case anyway, but just for clarity, it's good to say that this is a nice way to define it. And now I will also talk a little bit about what Harry said said Monday, just to remind you, namely that a general way of doing this is by using port-based teleportation. So port-based teleportation is a primitive which was developed by Ishizaka in Hiroshima. I guess the paper's from 2008. I think the archive version might be a little bit older. And to analyze it is actually quite complicated, but the idea is relatively simple, namely that Alice and Bob share a bunch of, you know, share a big entangled state. Alice has some state psi she wants to teleport to Bob. And Alice does some measurement on her side, and after this measurement has been performed, one of the ports on Bob's side has this state exactly, exactly up to some error epsilon. But in particular, Bob doesn't need to perform any teleportation corrections, which is very important. So from Bob's perspective, all he has to do is trace out some other qubits, he throws away the rest, and then what he's left with is the state that he was searching for. A kind of fun exercise is to think what really happened, for example, what would happen if you imagine this is a computational basis state, and then it's a very silly way to communicate a string, namely Alice and Bob sharing a bunch of classical strings, and then Alice saying a random classical string, and Alice pointing to one and saying, that's the one I want to communicate. So they have to be lucky, and you know, one of the random strings has to happen to be the thing they want to communicate. So in a classical case, it's not often a very very useful thing to do. But in the quantum case, of course, teleportation is hard, right? You know, using entanglement with a classical channel, and port-based teleportation is actually a very useful thing to do. Namely, it's the best way we know to perform this instantaneous non-local quantum computation for an arbitrary channel. And this Beijing and Koenig showed how to use port-based teleportation with like one extra step to do this INQC task for any map, I guess, but in our case, we can think of unitaries, for any unitary. So for any computation. Harry showed it on Monday, but the trick is basically that Alice teleports, uses normal teleportation to Bob. Then Bob does a port-based teleportation to Alice, and then Alice can perform the computation on all the ports. And if you puzzle with that for a few minutes, you can see that you can make this work. But now, so it's nice that we know how to do it for general things, but this is extremely inefficient. This grows a lot. So what's a very interesting question is to just take it abstractly to say we have some thing we want to perform. And it's simpler, and can we find some complexity measure of the thing we want to perform to find out how hard it is to perform this instantaneous non-local quantum computation? So we're going to use teleportation. Everybody knows teleportation, so I'll just use this to set some notation. So teleportation, instead of port-based teleportation, we're going to use normal teleportation, where Alice does a Bell measurement, sends some outcome AB to Bob, who has it up to corrections. So I'm going to write Pauli's with some power a lot in this talk. So this is basically you can interpret this, that Pauli X is there if X is 1, and if A is 1, then you have to do the Pauli X correction. If A is 0, you don't have to do it. And also the same for Z. But I'm going to write this matrix powers a lot, because that that makes everything a bit shorter, and then we can multiply them nicely. So the simplest the simplest class of circuits we might think about, and we also saw this Monday in Anstock as her starting point before it was built out to a more complicated protocol, is the Clifford group. So the Clifford group is generated by it's a group of quantum operations, and it's a subset of all the quantum operations. In particular, it's a finite subset. And it's generated by the Hadamard, the phase gate, and the CNOT. And the nice part about this group, and that's actually also how you can define it, is that it maps Paulis to Paulis. So Hx is, for example, equal to Zh. Pz is Zp. Px is xzp. Actually, I haven't really checked if the minus signs are all correct. But in principle, ignoring global phases, all these type of relations hold. And so that means that if we now write the teleportation corrections as in the previous slide, with just as a power of matrix, like we just say x to the a, then these teleportation corrections change from change in this way. So for example, p times x. So if the p is here and there's an x, then we'll get a z. But if there's no x, then we don't get an extra z. So what effectively happens is that this x, that the fact whether there's an whether there's an x or not, is also included in whether there's a z or not. So in particular, we're going to get some computation rules on these Pauli corrections if you first do a teleportation and then do a Clifford. So for example, by applying a Clifford after doing teleportation, you kind of add and permute these teleportation corrections together. So the type of, I actually did an O plus here and a normal plus here, but all pluses there are, you can view them as bits, so view them as operations over F2. But in particular, the type of functions you're going to get on these teleportation corrections are very simple, right? Because we're only, with the H, you see we're permuting two of them, so we change them. And with the C naught and the P, you see we just add them together. So we just do addition over F2. So the functions we're getting are all linear in particular, only permutations and additions of the variables we started with. Of course, this is not a universal gate set, so we're going to have to add something to it soon to make it universal. And of course, from the title of the talk, you know that it's going to be the T-gate. In particular, for example, classical simulation is possible, so it's not even a very powerful class of quantum computations. But just to include the thing I just said about these permutations, to put it back to this picture of Alice and Bob wanting to do INQC. So you can, they have some big input psi. So the first step of the protocol is that Bob will just teleport all his qubits to Alice, and that means that for the qubits that Alice started with, nothing happened. And the qubit that Bob started with, Alice has in her hand, but with some teleportation corrections that only Bob knows. Oh, I see now that my notation is not going to be consistent, but don't worry about that. So just some teleportation corrections here. So Alice holds the invariant we're going to have, and that's actually going to be the case for all the protocols, so I'm going to stress it, is that Alice will just hold all the qubits. And Bob will have information that describes the Paulis that are applied to these qubits. So Alice has the qubits, Bob has the Paulis. And later it will be that Alice has the qubits and Alice and Bob together have the Paulis. But in general, it's going to be a form like this. So it's going to be some state psi, the psi that we wanted. That's the actual input with some extra Paulis. And now, if Alice applies her Clifford C to it, then you know, from these commutation rules of the previous slides, we can just you know, kind of change this ordering, and this will be equal to some other Paulis times C times psi. And well, in particular, this C psi is just the in particular, these teleportation corrections have a tensor product structure, right? So the first n qubits that Alice holds are actually will be her output qubits up to teleportation corrections up to some Paulis, and the other n qubits that Alice now still holds in her hands will be Bob's output qubits. So basically, Alice can just send Bob's qubits to him, and Bob can broadcast you know, these these A and B strings, and then both of them can you know, use these commutation rules to compute what the C and D strings have to be, and use that to do their corrections. So with you know, with order n, I guess depends on what you mean with sending back. Like if you want to use this, use an EPR pair or just a quantum channel to send it back. But you basically need either n EPR pairs, or if you want to use only classical communication, you can do it with 3n EPR pairs. But that doesn't really make a difference. Oh, 2n, sorry. Of course.
Somehow I thought that was already pre-shared entanglement between the two of them.
Yes.
Now you're talking about actually sending from one to the other, which doesn't seem very instantaneous.
Oh, yes. Sorry. So the n EPR pairs are what they share. And the fact, and Bob just does a Bell measurement on his half, and he doesn't. And then I'll already describe Alice's thing on this. But the sending that happens, I mean, as the final step. So their simultaneous round of communication is going to be Alice sends the n of the qubits back to Bob, the qubits that he teleported, and Bob will send the classical information. But that's like the only round. So this line will be, you know, Alice sending the right half of this state to Bob, and this line will be Bob sending the correct corrections to Alice. And of course, it's classical information, so he also remembers them for himself, because he is also going to need them for the qubits that he receives.
Wait, sorry, what's the relation between the A's and B's and the C's and D's?
Well, that depends on C. So it's just going to be some function which is defined by C. But in principle, you can actually write it as a kind of a simple matrix of 2n by 2n over F2. So it's like, I think it's maybe an upper triangular matrix over F2. Well, I mean, you can find it, but it's basically quite a simple set of things.
So one more thing. So the Bell measurement that he's doing, these are pairwise measurements between two of the...
Yes. So he's basically doing normal teleportation, but in our heads, we kind of don't do the correction yet, because we first let Alice apply her stuff. But yes, it's just pairwise, one-to-one. And actually, basically, all my things are going to be that. All my teleportations, just the normal one applied in TensorFlow. Yes, and of course, please interrupt me, because it's.
The goal is to apply a C that it's global, but then by means of local actions.
Yes, so the C is a global thing, so it spans both Alice and Bob's input qubits. Indeed, and that's why, you know, and the local actions is going to be that's instead of applying. You know, the qubits are never together for C to apply, so we're going to apply C on her qubits and halves of EPR pairs that are basically uncorrected qubits from the other side. Yes, so I'm happy you asked questions here, because it helps a lot if you understand this one, because all the other stuff is just going to be building upon what we do here, because this is nice. Oh, wait, it bugged out. Let's see. Refocus. Oh, sorry. I pressed the wrong button on the remote, and then it's open to screen. Yes. Okay. So now we can do it for the Clifford group, and you know, we arrive at the point where this talk will kind of diverge from Anne's talk on Monday, because now we're going to extend the gate set with a T gate. So basically, if you have the Clifford group, you can extend it with any gate you want to make it a universal circuit. But the T-gate has some nice properties, so this is the most popular choice to extend it. Or I guess it's one of the two popular choices to extend it. The other is the Toffoli gate, but the T-gate is also very nice. And it's just this simple diagonal matrix. So in print, it's the square root of the phase gate, the P-gate. And this is a universal set. And now we were working with these nice commutation rules from the, for the Cliffords. So it's good to check out what the commutation rules are here. So in principle, so the commutation with a Z, you know, this commutes nicely, of course, because they're both diagonal matrices. But unfortunately, with this, with the X gates, we have some extra phase gate that we don't want. And now, instead of having, instead of getting some Pauli because of the commutation, we get actually a Clifford gate because of the commutation. And actually, this is also why it's a nice choice, because, you know, the nice part for the Clifford was that we got Paulis, but here we at least get a Clifford. So we at least get something that's semi-handleable, even though it's not as nice as before. And if we I write it in this, you know, if I just think about x and z as variable, then you see that, you know, that we get like a p to the a extra that we don't want. So if we commute it through and go to t psi, we get this p to the a that we don't want. And basically the entire goal, you know, once we set ourselves into this this way of thinking, is how to get rid of this p. And this is actually a situation that you also see in protocols for blind quantum computation, and or some protocols for multi-party quantum computation. Or it's actually also a situation, I guess, that you have in some error correcting codes that where this pattern pops up a lot, right? Where we've created a situation where the Clifford is easy, but then we have to you know, open a bag of tricks to try to deal with the T gates. So it's unwanted, and we're going to handle it in some way. And so what I'm going to describe is two ways to handle it. One, if we care about the T count of the circuit. So let's say we have some circuits, let's say the blue boxes are Cliffords and the orange boxes are T gates. So if we have a circuit with a lot of Cliffords and a few T gates sprinkled around, let's say K of them, then you can handle it with a reasonably simple protocol that uses this amount of entanglement. And now let's say we have a circuit which has T depth. Oh, actually light here. There should have been an extra number here, but the extra number will be back in the later slides. So if the T depth is D, then you can handle it with entanglement that scales kind of like n to the power D. I mean, it's actually a constant times n to the power D that we're going to get. So also note that these two things are, in principle, incomparable, because if you have only one layer of T gates, then you might already have n T gates. So that means that you know, that the right protocol is quite efficient and the left protocol is already very inefficient. But also vice versa, if you have you know, log T gates sprinkled around the circuit, then this right thing will actually give you quasi-polynomial entanglement usage. If you would try to use this one, this construction. So it would give you like 2 to the log n squared entanglement usage. Well, here you would still only use quadratic entanglement. So it's not that the left one is superseded by the right one, but they're both useful in different cases.
Sorry? Yeah. So how are you defining T depth here? Is it the depth of the T gates or the total depth of the circuit that contains T gates?
So I'm defining it as, I'll show it in a picture later, but it's basically if you decompose the circuit into a layer of a Clifford layer, then a T-gate layer, Clifford layer, T-gate layer, and I guess I take the Clifford and the T-gate layer as one. So that's one. But actually, because I forgot the number here, it's actually 68n to the power d. So that already takes, it makes this d, it's not exactly d, so it's like a constant times d, which we get actually. Yes, and of course here, note that that basically this situation, t and k, the Monday talk does it with you know, n plus k instead of n times 2 to the k. Or maybe n times, I guess n times k maybe. Probably plus. So anyway, at least efficiently in k, you know, then there's no problem if you have PR boxes, but unfortunately, we don't. All right, so this is the decomposition, the notation of the decomposition that I'll use. I accidentally messed up my animation, so I'll just forward and talk you through it with my pointer. So let's So notation-wise, think of the circuit in the following way. So we'll have a layer of Clifford gates. Then we'll have a T-gate somewhere on some wire. Then we'll have a layer of Clifford gates, et cetera, et cetera. So that's a circuit with T count K. So this is how I define it. What we're going to do is I'm going to describe the protocol and hope to give the flavor. I mean, the annoying part is that there's some teleportation corrections to keep track of, so that makes notation a little bit ugly. But if I wave my hands, I hope that I can, that is not too confusing. Because it's basically going to be a simple extension of the thing we did with the Cliffords. So basically, step zero is basically the same as before. Bob teleports, exchange the meaning of n. But that's OK. Bob teleports his qubits to Alice. So Alice now just holds the starting state of the circuit, psi zero. So let's say I'll say psi number is the state that I want the starting state to have after a certain layer of the circuit. So Alice holds, again, like before, Alice holds the correct state with some teleportation corrections that Bob knows. So as we saw before, Alice can just perform the first Clifford. This commutes nicely, so we're going to have this situation where we have the correct state, basically, here, with some the state that we want, with some new teleportation corrections that are like a simple function of C1. And now Alice will perform the T on some wire W1, like the wire that the first T gate is applied to. So in this picture, it would be wire 2. And now let's see what happens if we commute it through. Well, the annoying part is that we're going to have the correct state, so this psi 1. So because T, C1, psi 0, let's say this is psi 1, the state after one layer. We have some Pauli corrections, and we have a phase gate that we don't want, where I define B1 as the W1 entry of the things Bob knows. So now we have the situation that, again, we have the correct state, but there's a phase gate we don't want, and Bob knows if it's there or not. So now what Alice does is she teleports it all to Bob so that Bob can do this correction for her. So now Bob has all the states with some teleportation corrections, so Bob undoes the old stuff he knows to simplify my notation. And then he applies the inverse phase gate. So the state we had is like, this is the teleportation that we got from, corrections that we got from Alice teleporting to Bob. This is this phase gate that was unwanted, that maybe exists. And this is Bob undoing it. OK, so now is the, the thing that we're going to have to handle. Because now what do we have? We have the correct state. Because, however, if Alice had an X correction on her teleportation, and there was actually a phase gate to undo, if both of these things happen, then we have generated the Z gate because of these commutation rules. So basically, now we have a non-linearity in our Pauli corrections. That's the annoying part. So we have, on the wire W1, we have a Z gate if both of these things hold. So if this specific entry of Alice's teleportation corrections was 1, and the specific entry of Bob's teleportation corrections was 1. So now, if we continue from here, we're going to lose our nice invariants. Instead of Bob knowing all the teleportation corrections, we're going to have some complicated function of stuff that Alice knows and stuff that Bob knows that describe the teleportation corrections. And it's going to become a big mess if we want to repeat this trick. So what are we going to do? So we're going to do the following thing. I mean, so I said that we're going to have a complexity that scales like 2 to the power of the number of gates. So I'm going to do something that's, I'm going to pay to blow up my complexity by a factor of 2 now to be able to get rid of this. And basically, and it's quite a simple trick, namely, Alice and Bob share now, 2 sets of EN EPR pairs for the next step. And Bob just uses the first set to teleport back, the whole state if B1 was 0. And he uses the second set to teleport it back if B1 was 1. So he's just, and in particular, on the second one, here there's the option that there might be a Z gate. So here Alice undoes the correction. And on this side, Alice undoes nothing. And now note that one of the groups, like the one that Bob actually used to teleport back, is now back to the starting invariant. Namely, we have the state we want. Bob knows the complete teleportation corrections. So Alice can continue. The next step is going to be Alice is going to continue on both groups at the same time. And for one of them, she's actually doing the right thing. So we paid by blowing up with a factor of two to be able to get back to our starting invariant. So this is quite inefficient, but you know, maybe you have a very interesting circuit that has you know, has only a few gates, T gates sprinkled through, and Clifford group gates otherwise.
Can be understood as an abstract level, because you have to do something quadratic. You are doing the tensor power trick of doing a tensor power to simulate a quadratic function linearly. So that's more like what is behind. So if it will be, could be, you have three copies, and that's.
Ooh, that's a, I don't know.
So it's like the I mean, like some.
Yeah, I just
representation in a tensor power.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't have that intuition for the thing you mentioned to know if this is a good analogy. So if you have that, then it might be great. Yeah, I just viewed it as a very brute force thing. It's like you just run your computation twice for both options, and then, you know, guaranteed for one of the options you're doing the right thing. So it's a very, for me, it's like a very unary brute force thing. Yes.
So you're scaling at 2 to the k. Like, what evidence do you have that that's optimal, like even just the exponent of 2, like could it be like 1.5 to the k?
No, I don't have any evidence. This is just, it's all just, you know, what we could come up with, basically. Like the best lower bound for anything, any task of this form, and that holds even for Clifford, the Clifford group is linear. Mm-hmm. So you know you need always needs a little bit of entanglement. But no, I mean, it's a great question, and I think that's, and I'm actually very curious, even seeing, you know, if it's possible to make these constructions a little bit more efficient. But of course, I mean, there's much bigger open questions. But even that, I have no idea.
I said one question.
Yeah, of course. So
your Z errors, those will all commute through the poly Z?
Yes, these are all nice, yeah. The Z, no problem with those.
So we can just ignore those, right? You only need to correct the X errors.
Yes, so that's why we blow up with only a factor of 2, basically. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. Otherwise, right. If it's a more complicated thing, you might blow up with a factor of 4 or something.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. And so when you do this teleportation trick back to Alice, I guess more Pauli's corrections are added to it, but it's fine because everything is now known to Bob.
Exactly. Bob knows for the correct one what the Pauli's are. Yeah, now I said actually Alice undoes this, but she can also undo these because they're all commuting Pauli's anyway. So mentally you can really think of it as.
No, but Alice, what happened? Alice teleported into Bob.
Yeah, in the past. Yeah, in like the previous slide.
Yeah.
And now Bob will teleport it back with one of the two sets.
Right.
And then for this set, Bob knows the teleportation corrections. And this other set we don't even have to think about it because, you know, Alice is going to continue doing the whole protocol on this set, but.
I'm confused because he doesn't know that the corrections that are incurred by Alice teleporting into him.
No, but those commute with the new corrections that are going to incur from his actions.
Right.
I mean, those commute with almost all his things, except, of course, this phase gate, but that's the point.
But then Bob doesn't know all the corrections.
No, but Alice can undo those because those commute also with the new corrections of Bob.
Yes.
So actually, I wrote a Z here, but actually I should write X to the A, Z to the, you know, AX, Z to the AZ, and this set. And then, you know, and then you really have this clean form that we started with. Right, so then the point is, of course, that Alice is going to, you know, next time we're going to run the same protocol, but now we're going to do it all in parallel. And then if you just sum all this stuff together, you know, if you sum 2 to the I minus 1 over I, you get something like 2 to the k. I guess, now actually worried whether I counted correctly here, but I think it works out. Like, there's a few smaller order terms that you have to take care of, but I think that gives you like one extra I or something. So I wrote a big O, so I think we're good. All right, so that was the easy one. So I'm happy that you asked questions and that you're all still with me. So I hope I can keep you with me for as long as possible for this one, but it's a little bit annoying. So we'll see. And otherwise, you can, you know, you can get back in during the conclusion. So now we have a circuit. So we did our warm up with T count, and now we're going to do T depth. So our circuit, you think of it in this way. So we have D layers of Cliffords and then T gates. And then, well, in general, I guess with loss of generality, maybe you can put them all there. But then you might blow up your circuits a little bit. So just think about them as some subset to which the T's are applied. That's good enough. All right, and I'm going to prove, or well, I'm going to sketch a certain lemma, and that's the following thing. Let's say we have this situation. We have Alice that holds a qubit now. Just think of psi as a single qubit, because we're going to use it as a bigger thing. And the qubit has some phase gate, and whether the phase gate is there or not is a function of x and y, where Alice knows x and Bob knows y. And so the claim is as follows, namely that with only local operations that expend some entanglement, she can go to a situation where she holds the qubit without this phase gate and some Pauli corrections that depend on some x prime and y prime, such that the number of e-bits they need for this scale on the Gardenhaus complexity of this function f, and that the Gardenhaus complexity of these new functions g and h is only linear in the Gardenhaus complexity of f. So I will come back to this, so you, I don't, because I'll go redefine, I mean, I'll define Gardenhaus complexity again just to refresh Harry's talk. But the idea is that this is going to be a way of now having these Pauli corrections will now be very messy and depend on things of Alice and Bob. But the way they depend will have some complexity measure attached to it that we can control in our induction. So I'll just go through this quite quickly because Harry did it on Monday, but just to recap. So the Gardenhaus model is a model of computation, you know, actually inspired by this by another QPV protocol where you route a qubit, where Alice and Bob, you know, have two gardens. Alice also has a water tap, and they have some pipes between their gardens. Alice has some input x, Bob has some input y. And there's some function that they want to compute in this model. And if this function is zero, then the water has to exit on Alice's side. If the function is one, then the water has to exit on Bob's side. And based on their input, the players are able to connect these pipes together. And Alice can also connect the water tap. So it's, you know, your physical intuition will help you see that this, you know, that the water will end up on one of the two sides. And, sorry, if I press this button, if I misclick, then I have to redo this. And in particular, we define the Gardenhaus complexity of f as the minimum number of pipes you need to compute some function f in this model. Maybe I'll skip the beautiful animation, but this is you know, some example that, you know, the inequality on bits where Alice decides to route the water through the first or the second pipe depending on her first bit, and then connect some pipes together based on her second bit, and the same for Bob. And some, you know, basic facts about this is that every function has at most exponential Gardenhaus complexity. For simple functions, this Gardenhaus complexity is so for functions in log space, this Gardenhaus complexity is polynomial, which you can do using Bergson's theorem. Not all functions are simple in this model. And there are also some functions where you can prove some explicit lower bounds. But in particular, we're actually not going to use this fact as a black box, but we're actually just going to write down some functions and then show that the Gardenhaus complexity of these functions is low by just writing down a protocol for them. And I'm going to use it kind of in the following way. So now imagine Alice and Bob sharing some EPR pairs, Alice having some qubit with some phase correction she doesn't want. And they can use the Gardenhaus protocol to teleport this qubit back and forth, say in such a way that the qubit ends up here, maybe if the function is zero, and here if the function is one. And then because now they're qubits, right? They're FER, so Alice can just apply the inverse phase gate to one of these qubits. So what happens now here that if this function is 1, then this inverse phase gate will actually be applied because of the way the qubit is teleported back and forth. For example, if x is 1 and y is 0, then you see that first the qubit is teleported here, and then the Bell measurement is performed with the second and the fourth. So then the qubit will be here. So she will apply the phase gates. But if the function is 0 and she would teleport through the top one, she would not apply the phase gate. So she's actually applying the phase gates to her qubit, and she doesn't know if she's doing that or not. So one of these qubits will now actually be some Pauli corrections. We've teleported a bunch back and forth, so there will be some new Paulis, but with the phase gates corrected. So this is a way that if this function is simple and has low Gardenhaus complexity, we can undo this phase gate.
Would it work for any F-routing protocol as long as it's simple?
Yeah, that's a great question that I've wondered about myself, and I don't know the answer. Because the nice part about this one is that it commutes very nicely with the Paulis.
Yeah.
Like all the actions we do commute very nicely with the Paulis.
The title makes me think of a lower bound if it talks about how much entanglement we need. Is this indeed the case?
No, sorry. Yeah, need is the wrong word here, actually. It's exactly, it's a method. It's like through this, if we use this method, then we need the Gardenhaus. But yeah, you're right. Need should be kind of can use, basically. That's true. Yes, but so this is almost what we do, and actually in hindsight, but I only realized that after writing up the paper, if you use end teleportation trick from Monday with just a gate teleportation, this might actually be enough. But now we've actually routed the qubit back and forth. So actually we need one other trick, namely, in the previous trick we would lose track of where the qubit is. So Alice either has the qubit here or here, but she doesn't know which of the two it is. But there's actually a simple trick, namely you can do it twice, and then connect the outputs of the first one to the inputs, connect the outputs of one to the outputs of the second, and then the inputs of the second will be. The original place you put it in will be the place where you put it out. So this is, maybe this went a little bit fast, but it's just a small trick you can use to make sure that the qubit will pass the phase gate or not. And at the end, Alice knows again where it is. So you can kind of relocate it by doubling the complexity. So this protocol is kind of almost enough to show this lemma, except we need this one trick, and we need this other observation. Namely, I had two parts, right? This lemma had two parts. I said I use at most the Gardenhaus complexity e bits to do this phase correction, so that's what I just hand wavingly showed, and the second part is that the teleportation corrections I end up with are not too hard, so I have pretty low Gardenhaus complexity themselves. And I'll not do this too detailed because, you need to have some experience with keeping track of all these pipes. But in principle, you can explicitly show, and it's kind of in the simplest way possible, that let's say for the Z correction, that Alice teleports a qubit back and forth. So Alice will have some teleportation corrections, Alice and Bob. So Alice will have teleportation correction AX, AZ, AX, AZ, 2. Bob will have some corrections BX, BZ. Then you can very easily write down a Gardenhaus protocol where for every EPR pair in the original one, you kind of write two pipes such that you attach these pipes, parallelly, if the x correction was 0, and you attach them crosswise if the x correction is 1, so you're kind of keeping track of the XOR of all your teleportation corrections along a path. And this is a little bit hand wavy, but if you would spend like 10 minutes with it, I think you can be convinced. So basically, you make a Gardner's protocol which follows the exact same back and forth teleportation path, but now just with two pipes each, and you know, the water goes to the top or the bottom, depending on the XOR of the corrections along your path. So this is for the X corrections of the protocol I just showed. So now we're almost there with showing the lemma, except I lied to you a little bit, namely because in this construction I showed, along the path, at some point, we also do this inverse phase gate. So that's a little bit annoying because this inverse phase gate might also change the Paulis that we apply. And then we can make it a little bit more complicated, namely, for the before the phase gate, you can use only the Z outcomes to perform your correction. And then after the part of the phase gates, you can compute of the inverse phase gates, you use both the X and the Z correction to compute your Z correction. So this is a little bit, it's a small detail, but I just put it in, but don't worry about it. it works. So basically, the reminder is that we show that if we have a qubit with a phase gate depending on some function, then we can use local operations to get rid of it without making the Pauli keys too much more complicated. Just to repeat what I just sketched, namely by the first observation, you can use only 2 times the Gardner's complexity of EPR pairs to get there. And by the second thing I sketched is that the X correction is at most 4 times the Gardner's complexity, and H correction, it's going to add up to 11. I think you can do better, but 11 is what I have. So now we have our lemma. We can, for a single qubit, we can get rid of this annoying phase gate. So now just very quickly sketch how we put this together. But now there's actually no more difficulty left. The important part was that we have this complexity measure that we can kind of control. And now all we have to do is now intersperse it with these Cliffords. So just to remind you, we have a circuit, TWD, and we want to show that in with complexity n to the d, we want to do non-local computation. So again, the invariant now is that Alice is going to hold the qubits of the form the correct state with some Pauli corrections. And now these Pauli corrections are functions of stuff Alice knows and stuff Bob knows. So the Clifford step is basically permuting and summing these functions together. So then you can show that the Gardner's complexity of the functions after the Clifford step is, well, it's kind of like the sum. I mean, it's a little bit more complicated, but it's kind of like the sum of all of them at most. And then for this T-layer step, we apply this, we have to undo this phase gate, so we can apply this lemma in parallel for all of them. So do this correction individually for all these qubits. And then this Gardner-Haus complexity of all these functions blows up by a factor of 4 and 11. And together, and if you add a little bit of routing back and forth, I got up to 68 n to the d. I think you can do better if you really care, but this is basically what all of this put together gives you. Like maybe if you squish some steps together, you can do a little bit better. But it's kind of like 11 plus 4 plus some times some 4 you get here plus a little bit extra. All right. So now what have we shown? So we have So in general, we know that this original scheme that Harry and others used for from Weidman was doubly exponential the number of EPR pairs for general circuits. With port-based teleportation, we got here. There's actually also a very nice 2-qubit circuit which you can do here. This paper added added for the T count k added something of this form. I think N's construction, if you have PR boxes, will be, of course, much, much more efficient. The T count, with low T depth, we did something like this. And I also should mention that a more recent thing for a different class of circuits, I actually didn't know how to summarize it, so I should ask ask Kveria how to say it. But from the structure of the circuit, that if your circuit can be described by small loud counts, you have something that's also efficient, and it's kind of incomparable with this T count thing. So he actually shows a thing which has a high T count or high T depth, but low complexity in his model. So that's like this is a few of the general constructions that we have. So let's see how I'm doing on time. Oh yeah, that's great. I'll skip one small thing. Yeah, this is just a small thing that's just fun, but I don't know if people talk about it a lot, but I'm just curious at how good these INQC things can help for just computation tasks. So let's say you have a few quantum computers that are far apart, right? You have a quantum server here and somewhere across campus or across the country, and you want to do some joint computation, and maybe there's some unitary which spans the two things. Then normally, of course, if you want to execute such a unitary, it will take time 2D, because you have to send a qubit somewhere, and then you have to do an operation and do it back. But now we can do it in time. If this U is describable by a small small T-count circuit, you can actually do it in time D. So I don't know when this is useful, but I just thought it's fun to see that you can have trading entanglements for time in parallel computation. Although, of course, the speedup is relatively modest. But I was just curious if there's more room for speedup if you have more computers or servers. Okay, then I had like a fun thing that I only wanted to do if I had plenty of time, but maybe I'll just skip it. But actually, you can use some of these tricks to build a homomorphic encryption scheme. So that's a fun thing, and ask me about it if you would. I thought we needed 15 minutes to leave time for questions. Oh, I guess then I'll just show this. It's just a fun application of these tricks. So okay, homomorphic encryption is an encryption scheme where you want to encrypt the data such that another party can compute on it. So for example, you might have, you might not trust Google that much, but you still want to use their machine learning algorithm to tag your photos. So maybe you send a photo and you wanted to send back child and cat and chair, right? I don't know why we're in this part of the alphabet, but it's fine. but we wouldn't like to send our private chair pictures to Google for privacy reasons, and so we would like, but Google also doesn't want to send their neural network to our computer. Well, for one, it's very big, and secondly, they paid a lot of money to train it, so why should they give it to us? So this is the situation. So what we would like is a cryptographic way to let someone else compute on our data, such that the other person doesn't know what data they're computing on. And in some sense, you also, you have this flavor of non-local computation there again, because in some sense, Bob is also computing on the data before he knows what Alice's data is, and vice versa. So, that's the reason why there's a little bit of connection here. So what we really want is to take these photos, encrypt them, send the encrypted version back. We get back an encrypted version of the output, and then only we that did the encryption can do it. So there are some classical protocols, and you might wonder about quantum protocols for this, and where you want to do a quantum circuit on encrypted data. So then probably not pictures anymore, but with some other quantum states. And quantum one-time path is really similar to quantum teleportation, right? So we have in some sense they're each other's, they're basically the same thing. So we actually, some years ago, what was fun is that we could use this main lemma where you could kind of undo this phase gate as a function, which is applied as a function of some classical info, to undo that without too much entanglement. We could actually use that as a starting point and build a fun quantum homomorphic encryption scheme. I guess by now they're bypassed by others that have more complicated computational assumptions built in, but it still was like a fun application of this trick. So just to summarize what I said, so in general we're inefficient, and we showed two of them that scale exponential, one in the T count and one in the T depth. And there's many interesting open questions. Just to name a few of them, namely, I gave this table earlier of a few examples, but I think there's many classes of circuits that we might think, morally say that they're pretty simple, But we still don't know if they have efficient non-local computation protocols. So for example, if you have match gates, if you would repeat this for continuous variables and then take the Gaussian operations as Clifford operations, you know, I even actually don't know how to do this whole thing for Q-trits or Q-dits, because I think you will have like a Clifford group and you will have some nice symmetries for these other, for higher dimensions too. But I actually don't know how all these tricks work. Or if you have more than two parties, for example, if you have three parties. So this garden hose model was actually designed to describe some class of attacks on these F routing protocols that I think we've seen this week and we'll also see more of today. But actually, it's no longer, you know, we have some very nice examples of functions that have efficient attacks for which no garden hose protocol exists, probably. So this code routing paper showed better than garden hose things. So maybe instead of the garden hose complexity, you know, maybe there's another complexity measure that also where you could also perform this whole backup tricks. So where you could do like the code routing complexity instead of the garden hose complexity. And I'm kind of curious if you can do, you know, get a bigger class of circuits. Right, there's like these, you know, this question that Adrian also mentioned of if you have multiple parties in space-time, not just attacking QPV, but you have many parties spread over that jointly spoof some physical system, then Kvir has some nice way of doing that. But I think his resources scale. I mean, you can just use this general port-based teleportation attack. So, you know, of course, the question can be that if this physical system is described by a low-depth quantum circuit, say, can you spoof it with polynomial resources or more modest resources than an exponential to the power of the number of parties? Also, an interesting question that I didn't really get into here is the error dependence. So in general, you could, you know, if you apply these tricks to only a few qubits, let's say you have one qubit with a single unitary, and then you do, you know, just write it down in a Clifford plus T thing, you will have a little bit of error. And then the error will, the error of that will scale with the number of t-gates. So if you want error log 1 over epsilon, sorry, if you, the number of t-gates you need scales like log 1 over epsilon at least log to some small power maybe, depending on your trick. So if you go from a general gate set to the Clifford plus T, you will have some small epsilon. And then now in the number of T gates. And now what I do scales exponentially in the number of T gates. So in general, the entanglement usage scales like 1 over epsilon for this protocol, if you want to do something precisely. And in general, for all these, I mean, it's perfect for Clifford plus T, but it has some epsilon if you want to use this to simulate a general thing. And the port-based teleportation protocol also has a 1, you know, 1 over epsilon or 1 over epsilon squared dependence. And basically, all general protocols I know scale like 1 over poly epsilon, with one example, namely this 2-qubit protocol by Eric and co-author. And so that's actually, which scales like log 1 over epsilon. So I'm actually kind of curious if someone can ever show that it's impossible to do perfect instantaneous non-local quantum computation, or even, you know, what's the error dependence that we should expect if we want to do an arbitrary thing. And of course, lower bounds. And, you know, in one small detail, which is an open question for me, but I'm not sure it's big enough to write like a full paper on, is the question that the 68 n to the d is clearly not the right number. And I can give you like 1 or 2 tricks already to shave off a factor of 2, and then you can redo the whole analysis. Like, for example, using gate teleportation instead of pasting 2 protocols back to each other should shave off a factor of 2. And maybe there's another factor 2 we had somewhere in this 11 that feels like it should be slightly smaller. So you know, this number can be smaller, but it's still going to be some number n to the power of d, except if you have like a real new idea. All right, so that's what I wanted to say. It's you know, went a bit into details, but I hope it was still fun. So thanks, everybody.
Maybe a few questions?
Yeah, somewhat of a technical one, but you at one point in your protocol, you had this, you added an extra, you doubled your complexity because you rerouted it in a way that Alice knew exactly where the correct port
yes.
was. Can you go over that step again?
Right.
I didn't follow that.
Yeah, let's see. I have too many animations. Maybe I should just do it on the board or something. Okay, maybe I'll do it on the board. So let's say we have some garden hose protocol. So we have a bunch of pipes and stuff is connected together, right? So we have some connections and some open pipes on, well, let's make it on both sides. So we start with like the origin here, the water tap, and then as function of their input, they will connect some things together and they will leave some stuff open. And after this protocol, and let's say, you know, morally here, maybe we apply some inverse phase gates if it's a quantum execution, and maybe on the left we don't. So let's say this is the kind of situation we have. So there's some open stuff here, some open stuff there. So what we do is we make a full copy, and of course things that are connected within the copy stay the same. But there will be a few open things. Namely, one open thing will be the place where we started, where we kind of connected our input state into. So that's here. So that's like here. And here these two were open, so these are open here, and these three are open and sort of open here. So the trick is, so we do the second one, and then we just connect them pairwise. So we connect this to this, this to this. The first open here to the first open there, etc. So we connect them pairwise. And what's going to happen is that the water or qubit is going to follow the same path as before. So for example, maybe the path is this, right? I don't know. It went here. It would have gotten out here. And now in the copy, it's going to follow the same path in reverse exactly. And it will always come out at the start. So no matter, you know, because these connections are the same, and because I guess Bell measurement is kind of symmetric in what you know, do you teleport from the top one to the bottom or the bottom to the top? It's all entanglement swapping. So it's going to follow one path forward, and then in the second copy, it's going to follow the same path in reverse until it starts where it started in the first copy. I mean, also the better answer is that I should actually have used this gate teleportation trick, and then just measure these in the correct basis, and then you might be able to get rid of this. But yes, so with two copies, you can always you follow path once, and then you follow the exact same path in reverse to the starting point. Yes, sorry. I don't know, if you have clarifying questions, and then maybe I can try to say it in a different way.
Maybe let me just try to reinterpret this. So we know the paths that work in the top layer, right? The ones that give you the correct computational analysis side. And so
yes.
What you're doing is for the other paths, you're kind of doing it twice. So that it flows back to the, so they all flow back to the same one, because when you reverse it, you will be assured not only the correct paths from the first time, but the incorrect paths will somehow also go through.
Yeah, so there's some paths that don't. Yeah, so actually what happens to the paths that are not used, so some paths are used from the start,
yeah,
and some parts are not used. And I think they actually become closed cycles if you work it out. But there will be one path left. I mean, I guess they have to be closed cycles because everything is connected one to one, and there's only one open point. So, yes.
Any more questions? What if you don't use T-depth or something else?
Yes, that's the nice part about the.
Maybe get better bounds.
Okay, so the T-gate is in the. I guess second level, I remember if you start counting with zero or one. Second level of the Clifford hierarchy. So that means that it commutes very nicely with with Clifford's in this, sorry, with Pauli's, that if you commute it with the Pauli, you get a Clifford. So anything else in that level of the Clifford hierarchy, you should be able to get the same construction. But I mean, yeah. Yes, but for anything outside of that, I mean, you can take, I don't know, your favorite other gate, the square root of the T gate, or for example. Then the thing you, the corrections that you're left with if you use this teleportation, will be a mess, right? Or I can take the cube root of the of the phase gate or something, right? So something ugly, not ugly, but but that doesn't just work so nicely with the Paulis. And I really don't know. So if you have a good handle on other ways of teleporting than using the Pauli group, then maybe you can make it work nicely with some other sets. But here for this bag of tricks, it really helps a lot that it's the second level of the Clifford hierarchy.
If no more questions, then let's have a break and reconvene after that. Thank you.